Now Naomi had a relative on her husband's side, a man of standing from the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz.
Let me go to the fields and pick up the leftover grain behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor.
Naomi said to her, "Go ahead, my daughter." So she went out, entered a field, and began to glean behind the harvesters. As it turned out, she was working in a field belonging to Boaz, who was from the clan of Elimelech. Just then, Boaz arrived from Bethlehem and greeted the harvesters.
The Lord be with you.
Boaz asked, the people responded, "The Lord bless you, Boaz." Boaz asked the overseer of his harvesters,
"Who does that young woman belong to?"
The overseer replied, "She is the Moabite who came back from Moab with Naomi." She said,
"Please let me glean and gather among the sheaves behind the harvesters."
She came into the field and has remained here from morning until now, except for a short rest in the shelter.
"My daughter, listen to me. Don't go and glean in another field, and don't go away from here. Stay here with the women who work for me. Watch the field where the men are harvesting, and follow along after the women. I have told the men not to lay a hand on you. And whenever you are thirsty, go and get a drink from the water jars the men have filled.
At this, she bowed down with her face to the ground.
"Why have I found such favor in your eyes that you notice me, a foreigner?"
"I've been told all about what you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband, and how you left your father and mother and your homeland and came to live with a people you do not know before. May the Lord repay you for what you have done. May you be richly rewarded by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you come to take refuge."
"May I continue to find favor in your eyes, my Lord. You have put me at ease by speaking kindly to your servant, though I do not have the standing of one of your servants."
At mealtime, Boaz said to her,
"Come over here, have some bread, and dip it into the wine vinegar."
When she sat down with the harvesters, he offered her some roasted grain. She ate all she wanted and had some left over. As she got up to glean, Boaz gave orders to his men.
"Let her gather among the sheaves and don't reprimand her. Even pull out some stalks for her from the bundles and leave them for her to pick up, and don't rebuke her."
So Ruth gleaned in the field until evening. Then she threshed the barley she had gathered, and it amounted to about an ephah. She carried it back to town, and her mother-in-law saw how much she had gathered. Ruth also brought out and gave her what she had left over after she had eaten enough. Her mother-in-law asked her, "Where did you glean today? Where did you work? Blessed be the man who took notice of you." Then Ruth told her mother-in-law about the one at whose place she had been working.
"The name of the man I worked with today is Boaz."
"The Lord bless him," Naomi said. "He has not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead," she added. "That man is our close relative. He is one of our guardian redeemers."
"He even said to me, 'Stay with my workers until they finish harvesting all my grain.'"
Naomi said to Ruth, "It will be good for you, my daughter, to go with the women who work for him, because in someone else's field you might be harmed." So Ruth stayed close to the women of Boaz to glean until the barley and wheat harvest were finished, and she lived with her mother-in-law. So we're in Ruth chapter 2. Ruth is a great story in that there's four scenes or four, what do you call in a play, four acts. So in Act 1 that we looked at last week, Ruth and her daughters-in-law, Orpah and Ruth, all lose their husbands. Naomi makes the decision to go back home to Bethlehem. So by the end of the chapter 1, Ruth, who made the choice to accompany her mother-in-law. Ruth and Naomi arrive in Bethlehem, widows and without a lot of resources for life, for security. And so it's kind of a low point when Naomi arrives with her, she's back with her people. She says, don't call me Naomi. Remember, that means pleasant, happy. But call me Mara, which means bitterness, you know, cause that's where the Lord has led me. She says, I went away full, but I've come back empty. But, you know, so it's not a positive kind of story up to this point, but there's this note of hope that the storyteller leaves us with at the end of the chapter. They arrive in Bethlehem as the barley harvest is beginning. So some hope for some way maybe that they can be sustained. In chapter 2, Ruth makes this decision, and she goes to Naomi and she says, let me go to the fields and pick the leftover grains behind anyone in whose eyes I find favor. That's going to be a key thought, finding favor in somebody's eyes. That's what Ruth is looking for. In the big picture, it's what we're looking for from God, that we would be seen, that he would look upon us with favor. So the author says, as it turned out, she ended up in the field of Boaz. You know, coincidentally, she finds herself at Boaz's property. It's just one of those underlying themes here in Ruth that God's providential care is leading these women. The author rarely comes out and says God is the source of this. There's a couple times that the author says that. In chapter 1, he says that God came to the aid of his people by providing food for them. So Ruth, Naomi, they're back in Moab, but they hear that the Lord has looked favorably on the people back home at Bethlehem. So, and there's another time, this is kind of a spoiler alert, when Ruth becomes pregnant, that's also described as by the hand of God. Not in a way like Mary, but that God somehow was in that to bless Ruth to have a child. So Naomi also in the story is claiming that God is directly the source of her misfortune. But generally, there's just this, God's kind of in the background, and you kind of get a sense as the reader that God's providentially taking care of these people. So I just want to talk a bit about this act of gleaning that Ruth is doing there in the fields. God built right into the law care for the poor. One of the ways that God did that was through the practice of gleaning. I need my Bible here. In Leviticus, it says, when you harvest the land's produce, you must not harvest all the way to the edge of your field. Don't gather up every remaining bit of your harvest. Can you imagine, like, that would be our tendency. Like, I have this harvest. I want to bring it all in, right? Don't want to leave any behind. Also, don't pick your vineyard clean or gather up all the grapes that have fallen there. Leave these items for the poor and the immigrant. I am the Lord your God. I'm commanding you this. And in Deuteronomy, something similar. Whenever you are reaping the harvest of your field and you leave some grain in the field, don't go back and get it. Let it go to the immigrants, the orphans, and the widows, so that the Lord your God may bless you in all that you do. Similarly, when you beat the olives off your olive trees, don't go back over them twice. Let the leftovers go to the immigrants, the orphans, and the widows. Again, when you pick the grapes of your vineyard, don't pick them over twice. Let the leftovers go to the immigrants, the orphans, and the widows. Remember how you were a slave in Egypt. That's why I am commanding you to do this thing. So kind of this reminder that You, at one point, you all were in that position, or your, at least your predecessors, where you needed my care, in order to provide for your security and your deliverance. Remember that. And I think, Paul's kind of getting at that when he's writing to the Corinthians. And, remember, he's gathering this offering for the people back in Jerusalem. There's a famine there, and he's collecting this offering, and he says to the Corinthians, as he's collecting the offering, our desire is not that others might be relieved while you are hard pressed, but there might be equality. At the present time, your plenty will supply what they need, so that in turn, their plenty will supply what you need. Just this understanding that we're all in need of care, and we're all in need of God's care. And our response to others is, in a sense, our response to God's wonderful care for us. There's other parts of the law that address caring for the poor, often described as the widow, the orphan, the alien, or the immigrant. People who don't have the ability or the opportunity to provide for themselves at the present moment. Every 7 years, the debts of those who have accumulated debt was supposed to be forgiven. If you were sold into being a servant to pay off a debt, that was, you were released from that. Family leaders were to assist those who fall into debt or lose their land from their family. And I think we see some of that, we'll see some of that in Boaz's response to Ruth and Naomi. But anyway, these things were built in to be a part of who they were as a people. Even God has, it's a reflection of God's heart for those who are in need. Psalm 82, God takes his stand in the divine council. He gives judgment among the gods. How long will you judge unjustly by granting favor to the wicked? Give justice to the lowly and the orphan. Maintain the rights of the poor and the destitute. Deliver them from the power of the wicked. It's the heart of God. So Ruth is out there gleaning, and Boaz arrives. And Boaz is described as a man of standing. Sometimes it's translated a prominent rich man, sometimes a worthy man. You could think about maybe someone in your life, a man or woman who has prominence, who somehow has this high reputation in your family, in the community, whoever that might be. There's often, three categories that scripture refers to, like economic wealth or prestige in the community, physical stature, along with that, maybe valor, or you're a hero in a battle, or strong moral character and integrity. And it seems like in this story, especially, Boaz is looked at that way with that. He could have been all these things, but that character and integrity that he seems to carry into these situations. So these people who command attention, who have a presence about them, and you just kind of see that in this story. Boaz arrives in the fields, the Lord be with you. He blesses them all, and they respond, and the Lord bless you, Boaz. You know, I read that this is a traditional greeting. It sounded very powerful to me, you know, Boaz arriving and blessing his workers there. And I think that was intentional to show the kind of man Boaz was. And so Boaz arrives and he asks, who is that woman over there gleaning? You know, Ruth, even though she's of this kind of lowly position, somehow she's noticeable. It doesn't really say why. Was it her beauty? Was it her hard work? Maybe it was the Spirit of God at work in Boaz, leading him to carry out the intentions God had for him. But Boaz notices Ruth. And so, he speaks to her directly, and he's promising these things, like, don't go to any other field. Stay here. Follow my women workers, as you're doing your gleaning. I'm going to tell my men not to lay a hand on you, and you can go and get a drink whenever you want. So These are things that seem to go beyond the normal allowances of a gleaner. You know, she seems to be given special privilege as she's out there in the field. She was just hoping to find favor, that someone would allow her to glean, I would think, and just that she'd be safe and treated fairly in that. But Boaz is going beyond that already. And then, you know, she bows low before him. Why have I found such favor? You know, what, why me? Especially being a foreigner. And she could have said a Moabite, who they didn't have a good reputation among the Israelites. But Boaz replies basically like, your reputation is preceding you. I've heard about you. I've been told what you've done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband. Remember last week we were introduced again to that prominent Hebrew word hesed, which is loyal love, steadfast love, faithfulness, loving kindness. It's often in scripture, kindness. And so that was noticed by the people, and word got back to Boaz. And we'll see here how Boaz also is going to offer the same kind of steadfast, loyal love in this story. And one of the key themes in Ruth is that God shows his chesed, his faithful, loyal love. He shows that to us through other people. And we see it in this story here. And then also Boaz says, it's noticed how you left your father and mother and your homeland, and you came to live with a people you did not know before. May the Lord repay you and reward you, the God under whose wings you have come to take refuge. So just that statement, you left your father and mother, and you came into a land, and you left your homeland. You came into a place and a people you don't know. The same thing was said about Abraham and Sarah. And we praise them for their faithful obedience to follow God and trusting him as they go to this foreign place. We see that same thing in Ruth. And she's coming now to take refuge, Boaz says, under the wings of the God of their people, the God of Naomi, the God of Boaz. So whatever Ruth understood about the God of the Israelites when she left Moab, she's beginning to see the steadfast love of this God through Boaz, through these actions. She's beginning to take those steps to actually take refuge under this God of the Israelites. And Boaz seems to be saying too, like, you've shown kindness to me indirectly by showing kindness to my relative Naomi. So it wasn't just that there was, it was undeserving. In many ways, Boaz's grace, God's grace, is undeserving, but in part it's also a response to how Ruth is treating Naomi along the way. May I continue to find favor in your eyes, Ruth says. You put me at ease by speaking kindly to me, your servant, though I don't have a standing of one of your servants. So it's starting to get a little more personal here. Like, not only as this man of substance you showed favor, but you've personally, in your kindness, like, I've felt that, I've experienced that. There's something deeper than just you're a benevolent, powerful man giving me some things. Like, you've personally blessed me by your words and by how you're treating me. So we see Boaz's generosity in all of this. But there's even more. You know, like, I picture, did you ever hear on those game shows, The Price is Right and so forth? The announcer will say, and that's not all. You can also win this and this and this. Boaz isn't done here. He says, come over, have some bread. And then at lunchtime, she's allowed to join the group, and Boaz is just giving her all kinds of food, so much so that she had leftovers. And then he says again, he tells his workers that no one is to lay a hand upon Ruth. And also, let her gather among the sheaves, not just on the edges, but let her go in right where you're actually collecting the stuff, and even pull some out and lay them down for Ruth, you know, purposely leave stuff for her. So it's just, his generosity here is amazing. And the kind of the culmination, the way we understand, Boaz's generosity is by the end, she gathered an ephah of barley. Can you believe that? An ephah. Anybody know what, how much that is? When you hear what it actually is, it's even more amazing than just hearing this Hebrew word. There's a couple ways we could understand it. 22 liters of barley. So picture a 2-liter container of soda. She would have had 11 2-liter bottles of barley that she's carrying home. Or 2/3 of a bushel basket. Or about 30 pounds of barley. So I think this would have lasted a month or two, if I forget, I read that, but it was a lot of food. And then also she's got this styrofoam container, the leftovers from lunch that she brought home too. So just this amazing blessing that Boaz gave to Ruth and then to Naomi as well. So Ruth asked, where'd you glean today? Like, this is amazing. Blessed is the one who took notice of you. There it is again, like, she wanted to find favor in somebody's eyes. Bless the one who you found favor. And then who was it? It was Boaz. Ruth says, that man is a close relative of ours. He's not stopped showing his kindness to the living and the dead. Again, that he has not stopped showing kindness, loyal love, kindness, loving kindness, steadfast love. It's that same word, that same theme here. Boaz is showing his kindness to the living and dead. Like Boaz is thinking about his dead relatives and taking care of their widows here. And he is our close relative, our kinsman or our guardian redeemer. That's just foreshadowing for next message, Ruth 3, where Boaz steps forward as redeemer. So we'll look at themes about what a redeemer is, how Jesus is our redeemer too. But just thinking about this story, this is a quote from Reverend Chelsea Harmon. The key theological lesson of this story is that God acts primarily through people. In fact, this is God's preferred way of acting in the world. Hence the laws about gleaning that look out for the poor and the widow and the foreigner. Hence the tradition of a kinsman redeemer stepping forward to help your relatives. Hence the calling for the people of God to bless the nations. Ruth is a story of God saving lives and providing future protection through the choices of these individuals. Doesn't happen automatically. Ruth had a step forward. Boaz had a step forward into these acts of kindness. But through that, then God was doing his work of blessing and loving and caring for. So Boaz's duty was to allow gleaning for Ruth. Now it doesn't mean that always happens. All these laws, it doesn't mean the people were actually doing it. And the fact that he constantly had to give, word of assurance, like we're not going to, I won't let the men touch you, you know, or do anything harmful. It wasn't like everybody was gleaning and it was all good and loving and so forth. So you can have these laws. You can say debt should be canceled every 7 years. It doesn't mean it happens, but Boaz was actually doing that. And not only that, but was doing so much more. Showing generosity. Jesus was the same way. He taught, it goes beyond the letter of the law. that what you're doing should be out of this motivation of genuine love and compassion that we see in Boaz. Just want to make one other point from Scripture. James 1, true devotion is this, the kind that's pure and faultless before God is this, to care for the orphans and the widows in their difficulties and to keep the world from contaminating us. So if you want to show your true devotion, it comes through in what you're doing. Boaz's devotion came through in what he was doing here. So I just want to quote Joshua Johnson. He wrote this blog for Life Song for Orphans. It's a ministry for orphans or for those who need adoption and so forth. In essence here, when James says we are to care for or to visit the orphans and widows in their distress, he's suggesting that we become the kind of people who move towards, who give intense attention to, and visit those in our world who have been outcast, marginalized, and pushed aside the most. And when we do that, when we step towards the hard and the broken, and not away from them, it puts the heart of God, demonstrated in the gospel, on full display, with a vividness and clarity and purity and cleanliness unlike anything else. When we act like Boaz towards the needy, God, the gospel of Jesus is on full display, that grace and that love. Your friends and family or coworkers might look at you and wonder why you're so boldly going against the status quo of avoiding and isolating yourselves from broken things, and instead choosing to say, I see you where you are and I'm coming after you. They'll wonder why, and you'll have a great answer to that question. Ultimately, because of what Jesus has done for me, we become men and women of stature when we act this way, like Boaz. So that question that I asked, what's the difference between moral duty and genuine kindness? You know, the moral duty is Boaz allowing gleaning. But he did something deeper. Is anybody willing to share anything that you said? What's the difference here between these two? Terry?
I said one is a burden, the other is a joy.
Okay. Yeah. One's a burden, the other's a joy, as we express it. The one, there's not much human connection, really, heart to heart. The latter, there's a lot of love and dignity offered to the other person. Any other thoughts? The difference between moral duty and genuine kindness.
Difference between minimalist and maximalist.
Okay. Minimalist and maximalist. Yeah. Doing the bare minimum kind of versus really generous and costly kind of offering of yourself. Yeah. The one's a little more survival. We're helping them survive the day. The other might be building something much more for their future. Okay. What's that?
Love.
Yeah, love is the difference. Yeah, genuine love. So the point of the story is when we choose to show that kind of kindness and loyalty, it might be our choice, like it was the choice of Boaz and Ruth, but we're acting on behalf of God who cares for these people. And hopefully we're doing it at the prompting of God's Spirit. God gives hope to people through our actions, helping them to go from empty towards full. So may we be blessed by the story of Boaz and Ruth today. Amen.